Welcome to the Father's Day. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. Don't forget to support the Father's Day by going to thefatherstate.tv or locals.com in the description there. I do appreciate it. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody. All right. I have with me today Amy Baldwin and April Lampert. And they are sex educators, authors, and co-hosts of the Shameless Sex Podcast. What the? Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having us, Jesse. Thank you.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Absolutely. It's almost Christmas. I don't know when we're going to add this particular show, but Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to y'all.
Merry Christmas to you and Happy New Year.
Mm-hmm. 2025. Jesse, what are you calling in for 2025? What's happening?
I don't know. I have to wait and see. So I got to ask, your podcast has a very interesting name, title, Shameless Sex. Let me ask first, what's important to you guys?
So important to us, I would say to help people work with the shame and the trauma that they've experienced in their lives and normalize conversations around sex. We definitely want people to have more pleasure if they seek it, because we feel like pleasure is people's birthright. And consent is, of course, number one for anything that comes in terms of sexuality.
And so you want people to be able to, you're teaching people to have more pleasure when they're having sex?
Yeah. Yes. Understanding their own bodies first, like understand your body and what's right for you, and less compliance when it comes to sex and more pleasure understanding, so it can feel good to be in pleasure. And it doesn't necessarily have to be one way or look one way. Sex can be many different things for many different people.
And so, Amen, who came up with this idea?
That's a good question. Who came up with this idea? So April and I both have been sex educators and working in the human sexuality field for many years. And we guested on another podcast called Sex with Emily. She's one of the biggest sex and relationship podcasts in the United States, if not the world. And we both looked at each other during that recording, because it felt so good and so right for us to share and talk about sex as openly as we were. And granted, we had been doing that for a long time in other avenues and other outlets around sexuality, especially in the professional world. We've worked in the sex toy industry for a long time. April was VP of a sex toy company for, 7-8 years. She has been voted Woman of the Year within the industry. And so we always knew that we would create some sort of, I know, right? Sex toys, yay! And we create some sort of offering, and it just felt really right. So we both came up with this idea and created Shameless Sex.
So did you guys go to school to become sex educators?
I studied law, and then Amy and her mother actually opened up a brick and mortar, really beautiful sex shop in Santa Cruz. And we worked together. I was studying for my LSATs, and Amy was opening this shop because she did study human sexuality and psychology. And then I had never been in a sex toy store in my life. So where I grew up in the Midwest, they were scary places, and I never had set foot in any of those kinds of establishments. So I didn't know what that would look like. And then she kind of brought me in, and it shifted my life into more of the business of pleasure rather than, but not the business of pleasure as in owner of a sex toy company that's more medical devices that help people with pleasure. And then, the VP of another company, and we started the podcast as a passion project, but Amy really dragged me into it. Okay. It's all her fault.
I brought her into it. I was like, come on, you'd be really, really good at this. But ultimately, so when we opened up the store was called Pure Pleasure Shop, Pure Pleasure Shop. Now it's still Pure Pleasure Shop Online. But ultimately our goal was to help people. it first and foremost. We could have created a business model that was very much about like just sell terrible products and make all the money. But what we wanted to do was to create a safe environment for all people, men, women, to come in, to feel like it was safe to ask your questions, to get your products, or sometimes they just ask questions and they left. That's fine. And we had weekly classes on how to talk to your partner about sex, on, whatever, like how to's, because people had a lot of questions. So we wanted to create that resource for them.
Amazing. And so you were in business. Are you still in business with your mother?
Yes, just in the online world. We sold the brick and mortar in 2019. In the online world, we are still in business. And April and I were just talking to her. She's actually like right out here somewhere outside of her studio.
And so what is it like being in business with your mother concerning sex?
It is. So I grew up in Santa Cruz a little more like progressive or open minded, I think, in these conversations. Although in my childhood, we were not talking about sex all the time. It was not like the common conversation. And my mom did let me know that if or when I wanted to be sexually active, that I could talk to her about it. I could get on birth control if I wanted to be on birth control, but I could at least go to her and talk to her about sex, as opposed to it being this thing that you can't do, that is wrong, bad, and in fact, you can't get any resources to help you along the way. So I already knew that about sexuality, and at least with my relationship with my mom. So to open up a sex shop with my mom, it just continued on that relationship. Do we talk about everything with each other? No, we do not. Because we really learned how to create educator minds. And again, very much about helping other people. But sometimes side by side. I think it was beautiful. Honestly, the two businesses that I have opened up, one, Pure Pleasure with my mom, and two, Shameless Sex with April, like April and I doing this together, are the biggest blessing in the world. I have my best friend that I have a business with that we were checking out being in business together for years. And then we started this and it's beautiful. And same with my mom. She's my family. So how is it? Fantastic.
That's amazing. And so what does your father think about this? And that your mother is so open with you about sex, and is he okay with his daughter being into this like this?
So my dad has very advanced dementia now, so he doesn't have a lot of mental strength to have opinions about these kind of things. And when we first opened it, he opened the store. He was supportive. He was really supportive. He has his ideas about, certain things, whether it's sex, relationships, political issues that differ from me. And he was supportive though. I think he was proud. He went and talked to his friends and said like, my daughter, and he wasn't speaking about my mom, right? It was more about me. Like my daughter did this. And I think he thought it was really beautiful.
Are you happy that he has dementia now? He doesn't know the depths of it?
No. I'm happy that he is in a happier place. Like he seems more peaceful with dementia. But I mean, with my dad, he was curious about these. Again, more the business side. It was just more like for him, he was proud that I, growing up in Santa Cruz, being sixth generation Santa Cruzian, created my own thing that was helping people. And yeah, and I don't, he probably doesn't feel the way now because, dementia, which is very sad. And, but maybe deep down he does.
And April, how do your parents feel about you being into this?
I think that it was a difficult journey for, especially my mother, because she's very shy and she lives in Arkansas. My father lives in Tennessee. And my father and I, we've built our relationship in the last probably 5 years or 6 years because he was out of the picture. He didn't want much to do with his children until his third wife left him. And then he was like, oh, I have children. I want to have a relationship with you. And now we have a really actually a great relationship. We've mended a lot of that childhood abandonment stuff that I had with him. And he's proud of me. He's proud that he's the, you know, he has an author and, a person that is a certified sex educator, this, a businesswoman in the field of pleasure. I don't talk to him really about sex, because I don't know, that's a bit out of my comfort zone. If he came to me and asked me questions about his body or something, I'd probably refer him to some resources. And my mother, she's been on the podcast 2 times. Very, we've had mom shows just to talk to them.
Mom episodes.
not always about sex, but just, we just talk to them about what's going on or what's happening in life. And my mom still, right, she works at a church. She's actually retired now. But when the book came out and the title of the book is Shameless Sex, the same as our podcast, that's hard for her to tell her girlfriends about, like, right. Oh, my daughter, but she's not ashamed. She's very proud. And we've come a long way. And I never was in an environment that I was able to talk about my body or sex or any pleasure or anything with my family. It was always really taboo or a bad word or there was shame. It was, you don't do that and you don't talk about it, which I still have things that happen that come up for me in terms of sexuality that feel bad to talk about or shameful. And, it's not that I'm doing bad things. It's just sort of ingrained in me that, I should not talk about those things. That's bad.
That's amazing. And so what is it like for the both of you? And I'm assuming that shameless means you have no limitation, right?
No, that's not what it means.
No, not at all. No, there's lots of limitations.
And so, again, what does shameless mean itself to you concerning sex?
So originally when we started the podcast, we chose the name Shameless Sex. And we thought that the mission was to eradicate shame for people. Like, right. Our mission is to get rid of all the shame for people around sexuality.
Meaning and that then, people should be able to say and do. Your original plan was people to say and do whatever they want.
No. Because shame doesn't mean. So shame is a. It's not saying and doing whatever you want. Shame is, I did this thing or these things, and it's different. It varies from guilt, right? It's not that thing was bad. It's that I'm a bad person. And so shameless sex is to help people with that original wounding of, here's what the things I did, and now I feel like I'm a bad person, and therefore the way I operate in the world is from that standpoint, which makes it so I can't connect with people. And in fact, I might even put my shame on other people and hurt them even more.
But not even things that you did. People, like, think about locker room where someone shames the way your body looks.
Yeah.
Oh, your boobs are small. Oh, you haven't had your period yet. Oh, you have a small penis. Or
you're right? Circumcised or uncircumcised.
So
that's
creates
weird.
Shame. People think that they're bad because of the way they look. Or, I can't do something this way, so something must be wrong with me because they see something in the media on like they could be watching a movie and think that love is supposed to be a specific way, and because they don't have that, or it creates shame, right?
So shameless sex is instead, so we move from the eradicating shame things. We're like, that's actually not helpful, because shame actually can be a teacher. It can be, here's the thing that didn't work or was not in our highest self when we actually did it, or here's the thing that was never ours. Like April talking about, I'm in the locker room and someone's judging my body and, you know, saying terrible comments to me. Right. And then I held that in and it shaped me and changed how I can operate in the world. So instead it's us, inspiring people to discover those things within themselves, see how they affected them, and then to recreate their world, their way of being a sexual or relational being in a way that's really truly fitting to them while abiding by consent with the outside world.
Do you deal with men and women or just women?
Every yep. Person that's over 18.
Yeah, really. Over 18 crowd.
unless they don't get the explicit messaging. And then because we interview doctors, therapists, renowned authors, people with a lot of experience in the field of sexuality. But we don't necessarily, when we do interviews, just as I'm assuming with you, Jesse, you don't agree with everyone that you're always interviewing. It might be something that I would never do, right? Or never...
Oh, yes.
think that it's not in my field, but we don't want to shame people if it's within a consensual realm for wanting to explore that. And we're giving them a safe environment for them to learn about it and then choose the avenue that they want to explore that.
When men are with women who are into shameless sex, they just do anything, right? The men see them as sluts. What do you think about that? And they like, this is a slut. I would never marry this slut. It wouldn't be good to be a wife or a mother to my children, but I'll slut around with her, but not marry her. What do you say to those women when it's known that they'll become sluts?
Okay, so what defines a slut for that person? So what would be your definition of a slut, Mr. Peterson?
It would be a woman that has no limitation to what she will do and allow to happen in sex. Whatever you want to do to her, she just lay there and be a slut.
So I would say if that is not for the man that's involving the woman, then it's not the right partner for you. And
but the man wants to have sex with a slut. He just wouldn't marry a slut.
So then don't marry her.
But it's okay for her to be a slut.
Well, is it okay for him to be a slut?
Well, men are not sluts, they're slut makers.
Okay. So if you don't want to marry, it's all about a choice, right? If you don't want to marry that person, that's a big commitment. Don't marry someone if you think that they're too much of something for you. That's not a reason to get into marriage unless it's not consensual and you have to marry them. Then you have to figure out how to work with that, right? Hopefully that's not happening in this.
So how do you deal with the women who come in, you got to tell them what to do to not be, you know, the shameless thing. And they get all the material, they go home and they have these guys. And after a while, they start to feel like sluts because they see that the men don't want to marry them. What do you tell those women to do?
Slut it up. Go be yourself.
Sluttier the better. Just kidding. That is not what we do. Okay.
We tell a lot of jokes, Jesse. This is part of our dynamic.
We're jokesters. Yeah. I just couldn't help but laugh, but about like a woman laying there being a slut, like you're just by laying there, you're a passive slut.
Right.
Exactly.
That seems not very slutty to me.
No,
actually.
That seems.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, okay.
Okay. Yeah. That's your definition of a slut. Okay, cool. You lay there and let slutty things happen or you do slutty things.
Right.
And yes. Yeah. So, I think that, first of all, let's go back to the word shameless. Remember, we talked about this, that,
right.
So it's not about telling people do everything. That's not what it is. Do everything. But let's make that a pivotal thing in this conversation. Shameless sex is not telling everyone do everything, 'cause that's what you should do. What we are doing is we are telling people that a lot of the stories and the shame and the trauma and the things that you've experienced or maybe even done, has an effect on who you are now, and that every person is different. Each individual, just like April says, is like unique, like our fingerprints. Everyone is very different in how they are as sexual beings. And so what we're doing is we're inspiring people to look at the stuff that is in the way and hurtful and making it so they can't thrive even outside of sex. Like maybe it's affecting their work life, their health, how they treat their bodies. Maybe they have addictions based on this.
Oh, okay.
So it's a holistic perspective. And then it's, here is the information as the many ideas on how you can discover who you are uniquely, again, abiding by consent. So you're not like doing things outside of what other people are safe with in that same space. And then you live that life. And that might be getting married and having missionary sex with your partner and making 5 babies and never, you know, going to church every Sunday and never looking at another body. It could be that we would stand by that. We would teach that. It's just different for everyone.
Amazing. And do you get your customers? Are they educated people or professionals or Christian people? What type of people come in?
Get all sorts of people. It would be probably mind-boggling to think about all of the different walks of life. We have had really religious people. We teach a lot of live workshops, and an events in Utah with the Mormon community. They love us.
Teach the Mormons how to be shameless sluts?
Well, really? There's no sluts. There's
we don't call it shameless sluts.
Shameless sex.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. I'm probably one of the most vanilla people you've ever met. I'm sure you have freakier bedroom time than I do, Jesse. Okay.
Really?
I'm actually not as like Amy and I don't have OnlyFans. We've never shot porn. We've never done any of that. We're educators. We're very. I think we're both brilliant women that want to bring the world into a place that doesn't have shame in for things that I think maybe could have happened or could have occurred where they feel shame or trauma, right? Sometimes people have things happen to them when they're children that shouldn't have happened to them. And do they live with that? And do you call them a slut if they had sex with a couple of people that they weren't married to because they were trying to figure out their lives and if they were even sexual at all? Some people don't choose to have any sex at all in their lives. And that's, do we call them a slut or do we shame them for choosing what doesn't feel good to them?
That's amazing. So how did you get into the Mormon church, community to do this?
So we're not going in the church, by the way.
Right, No, they have never asked us inside the church, just to be clear. That's a good point.
But Salt Lake City in particular loves Shameless Sex, the podcast. We've taught workshops there, again, not in the church. And so we've gone to, there is a local adult store there and taught workshops there. Yes. Yes. And we've had Mormons who are still Mormons and Mormons who are ex-Mormons come to those workshops.
And, that makes sense. Amazing. Mm-hmm,
we do couples retreats to help couples that are even struggling with keeping their marriage together, that have five kids that are grown, that are out of the house. And they lost the tools to work with each other and they seek out help to really identify their love again, because it's more than just about the physical act of sex, right? It's more about, again, like Amy mentioned, the holistic approach. What's going on in your brain? Mm-hmm. What's happening when you want to connect with your partner? It's not just about the physical act of unifying your consummating your relationship on a regular basis and you have to do this. It's about checking in and cultivating deeper connection and intimacy with your partner.
I think half of what we teach is not about sex.
Yeah, seriously.
If not more. It's about relationships.
We could call it shameless intimacy. Would that make you feel better?
Well, it doesn't have the same ring, though.
I know it does.
That's right. It wouldn't sell.
Mm-mm, it wouldn't. No. Right. And intimacy, I think, is when I think of intimacy, I think of it as like all encompassing. It is sex. And it's also just relationships as well. It's all the aspects of it. And so we wanted to be as clear as possible with, our title and our model. So shameless sex.
That's amazing. And so when you not get into your personal business, but are you guys married?
We are not married.
I am divorced.
Oh, you're divorced. And was your husband satisfied with you having shameless sex?
It was shameless sex was birthed after my divorce.
Oh, I see. I mean, he's disappointed now, huh?
He's actually quite proud. He lives in Israel. He's Israeli. And he has said, because I have his last name, and I asked him basically for permission, is it okay that I honor your family's last name with this work that I'm doing. And he said, my family's super proud and we trust that it's in good hands.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It took some time. That didn't happen right away.
Yeah, it wasn't right after.
Oh, okay.
It took a couple of years for that. We don't have any children or anything either, so.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. So let me ask. So it's more about, it's not about loving the person. It's just about having the best sex. But you're not concerned about if they should love one another.
No.
Because sex is not love at all, right?
So remember what we said a little bit ago, that is half of our podcast isn't about sex.
It's definitely about love too.
Yeah. Which relationships, intimacy, love is a part of that. It's a huge part. So we most certainly are not telling people that love shouldn't be a part of it. Being honest, like, let's be honest, a lot of people are having sex or intimacy that doesn't involve love.
Yeah.
So we are giving them more tools on how to do that in a way that respects their own body, creates more pleasure, respects the other person, so that everyone wins. And when everyone wins, everyone outside of their bubble or their world also benefits from it.
And so what is love?
Ooh, what is love for you, Jesse?
Yes.
I want to know what love is.
I think it's I think love is when you have those feelings, the emotional connection to yourself enough to care about someone else in a way that you want to nurture and honor them. Like, I love Amy. I'm not in love with her. And wouldn't have, this is about as physical as we get. Like, I love you. And with a partner, someone that I'm in love with and that I share a sexual experience with, because I'm in a way that, like, for me, sex, like, when I choose to have, a sexual encounter experience with a person and I have a partner, I'm in a monogamous relationship for almost 8 years. When I choose to have an experience with him, a sexual experience, I love him so much. And I have had sexual experiences with people that I don't love, that I just was liking at the time. Mm. So it can be different for everyone. And it doesn't have to be one way. And for me, sex is giving up my power. That's for me. So I choose very wisely when I give up my power.
And Amy, what is love?
Similar to what April is saying. So for me, like, when you asked that question, I was like, so what is it when I'm like going to being in love with someone, specifically a romantic partner? I feel something in my body that feels like almost like my heart's going to explode out of my chest. And all I want to do is not only tell that person that I love them or how much I love them, but really take care of them, really show up for them. Just like, all I want is for this person to have the best life and feel so loved. There definitely is like a caretaking aspect of it, as opposed to them being like a completely separate entity. It's like, maybe they're more a part of me than a separate entity.
Oh, I see. So when you're having sex with guys that you don't love, do you have shameless sex in the same way you do with the guy you do love?
We don't really have one way. Okay. So we don't have a definition of what having, there's no shameless sex definition of like how to have shameless sex, because it's different for everyone. For me, if I'm having sex with someone that I don't love, my interpretation of what you're asking is, which is probably not how you're wording it, but I'm going to do it anyways, is like, can I show up with all of myself as shamelessly and fearlessly and just really wholehearted too? Like, I'm fully giving myself to this person.
Right.
And for me, no. With people that are, it's not about love though for me. So for me, it's about feeling safe, very relaxed in my body, very connected. I don't actually have to be in love to have those things, but I usually cannot have those with casual sex partners because I don't know them, right? So like, usually there's a limitation there. Whereas love brings it deeper. I can feel more of those things, but I can have those things even if I'm not in love with someone.
Very interesting. Mamma Mia, what is a man?
Oh, I thought you were going to keep elaborating on that. What is a man? Okay.
What is a man?
What is a man? Yeah.
Okay.
So a man is a human, first of all. Let's put that on the list. A man generally has a penis and testicles, a vas deferens, a Cowper's gland, and they have XY chromosomes.
Okay. What do you say, April? What is a man?
I second what she said. And I think that.
Oh, they have a prostate. Sorry, I forgot that.
And they have a prostate.
We don't want to leave that out.
No, we don't. No, it's a magical place.
I think a man is someone that has this more of this, I don't know, like a masculine persona, right? That has a penis. All the things Amy said, I won't repeat everything right. Because everyone heard
Capper's
that.
Capper's gland.
Yes.
Prostate.
And typically for me, a man, yes, has a penis and they have, yeah, like a, there's this masculine element that comes from a man for in my head.
And do you guys prefer beta males or alpha males?
Alpha is my thing.
Come on.
My partner's a giant alpha male.
Jesse, you're talking to us. What do you think we'd prefer? I mean, I would
assume alpha male but beta male with you guys.
Wouldn't you think, yeah, strong women. The alpha male for sure.
What is a beta male?
Yeah, they can't keep up. We're going to be like, and they're like, I don't even know what to do.
The beta male, what do we think of the beta male?
What is a beta male?
It's a good question. I think that maybe they would take a back seat or not show up in like a dominant way. They'd be a little bit more submissive when it comes to being a leader in a room, right? That they, if they were with horses, maybe the horses wouldn't be attracted to them because, you know, the whole horse
therapy
mentality, the horse therapy. Yes. Where they can seek the alpha in a group. Right. And maybe their beta could be alpha to some alpha males or females where they have strengths that maybe some other folks don't have, right? Some other males that are alpha may have strengths that are different, right? So I don't think it's bad or good if you're alpha versus beta either.
Well, I would think so. Like so an alpha male or like a strong man, let's just say strong man, when I'm like, I'm strong woman, whatever I'm saying or doing, they're like, let me meet you there as opposed to break you down and push me down and be like, oh, you're a strong woman. So I feel insecure. So I need to break you down. So they're going to meet me there. And when they're in there, I'm strong man, I'm meeting them too. I'm supporting that as opposed like you're too much or you're not enough. So there's like a capability of meeting and not feeling threatened by feels a lot stronger than just like, this is just what it should be or how we should do it.
Amazing. So Amy, are you dated at this time?
I also have a partner of over 5 years.
And do you obey him?
What does obey mean?
Obey your boyfriend.
What does it mean to obey?
Meaning to obey him.
Can you define obey, please?
You don't know what obey means?
I know what it means. I want to know what your definition of obey. Yeah, what's your interpretation? It's a word that has four letters, and I'm curious what that means to you, like when you ask me that.
Let me come back to you with that. I want to ask April, do you obey your boyfriend?
I think that there is
April knows what she's from the country. She knows what it means.
There's mutual obedience, okay, when it comes to our relationship, because if he said something, he'll advise. And so I'll be like, I'm taking your advice, but I don't think of it as obedience. Like, I feel like I have obedience training with my dog. So he knows how to sit. If my partner was like, sit down and don't talk, I'd be like, whoa, what's that about? What's going on? Is this advice? Am I I'm adhering to? And for what are you looking out for my well-being on some level? So in terms of obeying, if he says, hey, that pan is hot, I'm going to obey that and not touch it. Right.
But you know how women like to go on and on and on, right? And nag, and the boyfriend or the husband would say, hey, sit down and shut up. Would you obey that?
So if he said it in a way that was, hey, I've had a long day, could we talk later? I'd absolutely obey him and for expressing his boundaries in a way that I could hear him. If he said, sit down and shut up, I'd feel disrespected. And I feel like that would not be a man thing to do. Like, disrespect me. Like, let's do it in a way that can cultivate more love in the conversation. Do it with love. And if he's mad at me because I said something that triggered him and he's like, please stop talking because I'm upset. Like you said something that really made me upset. I'd be like, absolutely. Let's take a pause and let's come back. And I think that's the form of expression and how you meet your partner in a relationship is really important. And there can be things that he says that he wouldn't know that were hurt. They were hurtful to me in the way he said that. And if he said that in a hurtful way, I probably couldn't hear him, and I wouldn't want to be honoring his request to stop talking or just shutting my mouth, right? And if he said it in a way that was a lot nicer, right? Sit down and shut up. Like, would you say that to your best friend?
I understand. How about what? You, Amy? If you nag, you know how women love to nag and try to control and blah blah blah, right? And you were going off, and your boyfriend said, "Amy, sit down and shut up." Would you obey him?
Same as April. Same thing. Another thing that we do at Shameless Sex is we teach people about loving communication. So when he says sit down and shut up, in his mind or his body, he's feeling this is really irritating. She's irritating. She's driving me crazy. Whatever. Yeah. So the higher road when someone's feeling, especially irritation, because irritation is a very controllable emotion, especially how we convey it. He could, like April said, take a breath. And say very lovingly, like April said, I'm having a hard day, or I'm really stressed, or I don't have room for this right now. I don't have a lot of capacity. And so maybe later I realize you want to talk right now, but I don't have any spaciousness for this or whatever. But yeah, if you said sit down and shut up, no, I would not obey that.
Really?
I wouldn't obey any human that said that to me.
Really?
Ever. And nor would I ever say that to any human, because you're taking away their autonomy and their humanness, and that's not fair.
That's amazing. How do you guys deal with each other? When you're working together all day, you on doing these shows together, and all of a sudden the hell just come out of you. You're just mad, irritated about nothing. How do you guys deal with each other when the hell comes out of you?
It's a great question, because that does happen.
It does.
We are women. We're hormonal. Yeah. As you know, if you have daughters or you have any women in your life at all, there are things that happen. And just as any relationship, Amy and I are really, we're almost sisters, right? We've worked together for a long time. We've been friends for a long time. We've traveled the world together. And there are times where we're just not aligned, and I get snappy. And or
I do too.
Or she does.
I do too.
And I'm like, I need a TV timeout. We're taking like a commercial break so I can take some 20 breaths outside, in and out, and count those. And then we can come back. And sometimes it will take another day, right? I've never gone without talking. I usually will own up, or she will own up and be like, I'm really sorry. I exploded. And can we talk about this now? Let's like figure it out. And if the heat starts rising again and the temperature goes up and the water boils, then we'll take another step back. But it's a dance, right? It's two different people, just as in a relationship, and you have to figure out how to create unity and how to repair things when they start to get out, when there's disharmony, right? Because it's just a cycle. We all cycle in harmony, disharmony, repair. And that's like the ever evolving wheel that goes on in relationships.
Right. And how do you deal with her when the hell comes out of her?
Me? Amy?
Yeah, Amy.
The same thing, the timeouts, where sometimes I'll say things where I'm like, you know, when you start to say something terrible and you're like, oh no, it's like hard to stop. Blah, blah, blah. And then in your mind, you're like, oh no, I went too far. Yeah. Shame. So in that moment, I would say something like, you know, I'm really angry. I need time out. Like, I need to go and take some time for myself. Also to protect her and to get centered within myself, because I, you know, if I'm in a triggered state, nothing's going to happen there. We really can't communicate in that space. So same thing, you know, I'll come back and, you know, like April said, one of us will be like, okay, so I'm really sorry, or here's what I was feeling, or here's what I was speaking to. And I can promise y'all, like, that stuff brings us closer. It really does, because it's not exhausting. Sure, it's exhausting when we have like a feud with someone or some little argument or big argument. But it makes it so that we are like replenishing or not replenishing, but like we're filling our tank of connection to each other, because we know that the other person is going to take care of themselves. Like April taking a time out, she's taking care of herself, and that she's not going to abandon me. She's not going to give up on me, and we're going to work on it, and we're both dedicated to that.
Amazing. And so have you forgiven your mother for recreating you in her image?
Are you asking, who are you asking? Me?
Either one of you.
Oh,
I definitely haven't been, I think more for you.
Oh, it's for me. So I've been recreated in my mom's image and I need to forgive her.
Have you forgiven her? You know, how she mothers love to control you. She like to impose a will on you. She want you to do it her way. And it just irritate you at times, right?
Yeah.
And you're jealous of your father, your relationship, all kind of stuff. Have you forgiven her for turning you away from your father? And we'll start with you, Amy. Have you forgiven her for turning you away from your father and recreating her image?
The answer would be yes, because there was I've never had any sort of issues with my mom where I felt like I needed to forgive her. My mom is my biggest tie to everything, to the world, to my spirituality, to everything. And so there was never anything to forgive in the first place.
And what would she do? How would she act if you decided, you know what? I want to be free from you. I'm going to go out and live my own life. Leave me alone. How would she deal with that?
Her heart would be broken.
And why?
Because she loves me and I love her and she created me and we have such a special life bond. So of course she would be devastated and broken.
And have you, April, forgiven your mother for recreating you to her image?
Yes. I've worked a lot with my mother on a lot of what she's projected on me in terms of her, what she felt like she lacked as an adolescent and what she projected on onto me from a young age. And I also have a deep respect for her and a deep love for her. And she's someone that I value and I'm so grateful for her as a person that did raise me to be the person that I am, to be this independent woman. And yes,
and how did she,
I don't hold grudges with
how
her.
How did she react when you went to her and said, hey, I'm sorry for resenting you for recreating me in your image and turning me away from my father? How did she react to that?
Well, she didn't turn me away from my father. My father turned away from his children. So it was a bit different. She didn't really have a choice with that, right? So
but
it wasn't
she ran him
that-
off. He couldn't deal with her.
I think that
because
really,
when fathers leave, they don't leave the children. They leave the mother of the children because they don't know how to handle the mother, the hell in the mother.
Well, he was having an affair. And I think it was like more or less like he was uninvolved. I don't think he really wanted the life that he, I don't know. I was a child. I was like 5 years old. So, right. This is like a lot of therapy that I had to do for understanding because I thought it was something that I did wrong as a 5 year old child that my father left. And that was really and my father didn't leave right away. My mom actually left my father for being abusive. My dad used to hit my mom and my mom decided to leave. And then my father did a custody battle for a couple of years. And then I almost died because he was totally working all the time. And I got hay fever and had to be hospitalized because of negligence. My father just was never home. And so my mom fought to have the custody back for my brother and I. And then my father chose to get married again and then just not have anything to do with his children. And so my mom really didn't drive him off. She chose to leave because of the abusive relationship. And then during the custody battle, it was just, this isn't a show about me, so I didn't want to say all this. But since you ask, I'm letting you know that I don't feel like my mother drove him off. I think that she was madly in love with him. And I used to remember when they were in a healthy relationship, but I also remember the violence, right? And I can't ever forget the violence, and I won't ever accept that into my life again, because I don't feel like anyone should live with physical acts of violence.
When you ask him, why was it so hard for her to deal with, for him to deal with her? What did he tell you?
My father said that he would have made things right with my mom if she would have given him another chance. That's what his response is. And he says he doesn't ever remember ever hitting her or anything. Denial's a hell of a drug.
Amazing. That's amazing. So are you guys ever slut shamed? You know how people can be cruel because people are evil, right? Are you ever slut shamed? Like when you're out and about or online or anything?
Rarely. Rarely. And There'll be like the occasional comments from people
or assumptions. I think people assume more or less like that we are. Yes. Yeah. I think that we're adult film people or right. that we are
or,
some sort
or
of
everything we talk about means that we do it or, yeah. you know, and even if we did though, regardless, like it's, so we don't speak, our podcast isn't just us talking, right? Like April said, we bring in doctors, educators, therapists. Right. And so we're just trying to give people all kinds of opinions, whereas as opposed to just being like the Amy and April show of our opinions and our ideas.
Right. We don't do that.
Yeah. It's pretty rare to receive
that.
And
so how do you handle the selection when people are cruel like that, whether online or in person? How do you guys deal with that?
I don't really have, if there's people trolling and being mean, we just sort of move on. I think that's part of being a public figure. As you know, Jesse, I'm sure that there's trolls for any kind of work that you do.
Yes.
And so if you think that you're doing good work and that you know that and you believe that and you are a firm believer that what you're putting out in the world is something that's good and can help people, then it's kind of like the trolls can troll on and they can move on to someone else. Because I think giving it negative attention is almost worse, or giving it negative attention is worse yeah. than giving it no attention mm-hmm. because it's attention. So if you just kind of move on, it's like, you don't really exist to me. So have fun trolling. And I'm sorry, your life must be really hard. And I'm sorry for you.
Compassion. And then also if you have that one troll comment and then there's five that are positive, you know, we focus on those things. And then still, it's not that we don't take into account what people say. Now, if they're like, you're just a bunch of sluts, that's like the least effective way to get through. Yeah, yeah. We're like, oh, wow, that's brilliant. Versus, you know, if someone were to say something that was actually like, you know, poignant, that was like really speaking to something that one of us or both of us said or did, and that was constructive, like that was like, here's how I would, like they're saying, like, here's what would have worked better for your audience or how I was offended by that. We'd actually probably take that in more right. because, again, loving communication more really lands.
If we offended someone by something that said,
that, right? Yeah.
We definitely would apologize and own that and to say, hey.
Depending on the thing, right? Depends. But like, again, it's all about what it is and how it's worded. And as long as everyone's treating people like people that all deserve to be treated equally, like we can show up in that way, and that's really important to us.
When people go into your store to look for those sex toy things you sell, and do you pick them up and show it to them, or you point at it? Like,
We don't have the store anymore. We sold it in 2019, so it's just online now. When we had the store, almost every product had a display model out that was on like a black velvet pillow. And so they could go and touch it themselves and like know they were not getting naked and put it in their genitals, everyone. It was more to like, you know, feel the material, the quality, if it had vibrations, the level of vibrations. And if they wanted to talk to us, then we would come and talk to them about the products and teach them about it. It's very much like when you go to a doctor and a doctor is teaching you about a medication. They're talking to you about it. It's like that,
that
right?
We're
not like demoing on bodies and doing all kinds of the wild things.
So I tell men and women that it's best to wait until you get married to have sex. Because when you have sex before marriage, you become addicted and become drug addict, you know, like a drug. Which do you think is best, the right way, for men and women to wait until they get married to have sex or to have sex out of wedlock?
Well, I would say that I would never marry someone. It would take me probably 3 to 5 years to decide if I wanted to marry someone, right? And it's not something that I would feel compelled to do right away. And would I want to wait that long to have sex with my partner? Probably not. And I think there's other ways that you don't have to have, if that's something that's important to you and you're choosing to like have that as this sacred bond with a partner that you want to marry, there's other ways that you can be intimate or physical with them that doesn't have to involve penetration. You don't have to necessarily have sex. You could have other physical exchanges with them. It could be touching or kissing if that's something that's important to you. Am I going to tell anyone they should or shouldn't? Absolutely not. That's not why I'm here. I think if it's something that's in your value system and means a lot to you, then wait and find other ways to connect to them. That isn't necessarily sex.
And when you say, Amy, is it best to wait until you get married to have sex? Or is it okay to do it before marriage?
I think it just depends on the person. If you're someone who feels like sexual connection, like alignment, you know, like this works really well when we engage sexually, if that's really important to you, then I would suggest for those people to check it out before you're married. And if you don't know, or you know that it's not that important to you, that it's just something that is for procreation or occasional or just like, you know, maintenance or whatever, then waiting for marriage, or sure, if that's what you want to do. But I think it depends on the person. I know a lot of people where sex isn't that important. It really isn't like a staple of connection in relationships. And if that's, you know, their feelings, then great. You can wait forever. And, you know, if you have sex with that person after you get married and it really isn't aligned, it's not working really well for either of you or one of you.
Buy a vibrator.
You'll buy a vibrator from purepleasureshop.com. And you'll be okay. But if you're that person where it is important, like there's plenty of people who want to feel aligned in so many ways. It's not just emotionally. It's not just physically and like, you know, non-sexual physically. It's not just spiritually. It's also can be sexually. And for those people, why would they not check it out to make sure that it is in a way that feels good and safe
real reality. I know that in that father's day, we use sex for pleasure, as you said. But in reality, sex is only to make babies, right? It's not natural to have sex for pleasure. It's just that when we're in a fallen state, we develop that animal-like nature where there are no limitations. But in reality, sex is really only to make babies, right? This is not love. Sex is not love. It's only to make babies. Am I right about that?
No, not for me.
No. I mean, for you, yes. And for anyone listening to you that agrees, yes.
But God said that it's only to make babies, not for pleasure.
My thought is it depends on what religion you're in, what scripture you're reading, and who you're talking to, and what times you're in. And so what I would bring it back to is then why the pleasure?
Because you're in a fallen state and you feel like an animal, and there's no limitation to an animal. You just do anything, right? And that's why you have to overcome the fallen state so you can do things in a normal and natural way. But in that fallen state, you're like an animal.
The pleasure piece is it's probably there to make it so that when you are procreating for babies, it feels good. It inspires you to do this thing, right? Like, okay, this feels good. So, and we want to make the baby. So we're going to do the thing that makes it so that we're going to enjoy or desire to make the babies more. Yet that pleasure is still there. And there's so many things, like even let's take sex off the table. Jesse, aren't there things that you do that just feel good for
yourself?
Not
even sexual. It could be maybe stretching.
Yeah, especially when I'm eating some sweet potato pies or candy. Good.
And that's pleasure. That's like when it feels good. Some people might find pleasure off out of reading a really cool adventure book, or they might be like really looking forward to that. And I think in terms of being an animal, like the animal kingdom, for instance, there's a lot of diversity and balance in that, right? And animals, like the thing with humans is we have this ability to say what's right and wrong. And it's, if you have pleasure and you're experiencing pleasure from something and someone is there consenting to it and you're married to them and you're done procreating, you've had six babies, are you just supposed to stop having any sort of copulation or any sort of pleasure with them because you've already done the procreation?
Right. So you're right about that. Once you make all the babies, now you stop the sex thing and you overcome that and you start to love one another. Not based on sex or anything, but natural love. And that's the love that causes the marriage to last until death do you part. Because
it's
not based on pleasure.
So can you not have sex, though, after that? Is there no sex involved after that, though? Is it not allowed?
It's not necessary. You can do it if you want, but you love you love your wife and your wife loves you because you love one another.
But you're not procreating. Based on any type of stimulation. So this is the thing. It's like the chicken and the egg. If you're not procreating and you love your wife and you're done with the children, raising the children, but it feels good, is that animalistic and not honoring sort of this relationship that you've built that you want to feel good in?
Right. That would be animalistic then. Because don't you want to be loved because of who you and not because of anything else that make the person feel a fake love? Wouldn't you rather have the real love or the fake love?
What if you could have it all, Jesse? What if you
can, which one do
when
you
you're
prefer?
Having sex with someone,
which one do you prefer?
If you can have real love too?
Which do you prefer, the real love or the fake love?
I feel there's both. Yes, I feel like you can really love someone and have sex with them
for pleasure.
Yeah.
When are you too old to be having sex? You need to hang it up.
You're never too old. If it hurts and you're like, this doesn't feel good, my back, my neck, my hip.
Stop. Yeah.
Yes, then maybe don't go there and do stuff that feels good, right? But I don't think there's any age that you need to stop. Unless you're going to break a hip, then don't do it.
Probably
don't.
Yeah, if you're gonna,
then be careful.
If you're going to break a hip, yeah. And also, even if you're... So if you know you're someone who's about to break a hip, right? And, you know, traditional penetrative sex, which is, you know, generally for procreation, as you're saying, right? If that's off the table, it's not going to work anymore. Like, how we often teach and talk about how sex doesn't just have to be penetrative sex, right? And this is just us. I'm sure other people, everyone defines sex for themselves.
Right.
If sex is penetration, that's for
some
you, right?
But then kissing is sex.
Exactly.
Right? Is that
right.
Sex?
I know someone who thought hand-holding was sex once. It was very cute. You know, they were 16 and they're like, I did all the things. And they just held hands.
Or snuggling. People could be like, that was super hot and sexual. Right. I just snuggled with someone.
Yeah.
So let me ask, were women created to lead or to follow?
I think humans are created and leaders will be born and it could be any gender. It could be a person. It's built on persons, on people.
Personhood.
Personhood.
And so did God, are you guys Christians?
I am not, no.
I'm spiritual. I was raised Methodist and I was married to a Jewish man. So I don't know what you call me. You can call me whatever you want.
We'll
call
you April. So you're Jewish and not Christian?
She's not Jewish. No, she's married to a Jewish man.
I was married to a Jewish man. I lived in Israel and I never converted.
Really? And so are you, right now, are you eighth? Are you Christian or what?
I would say I'm agnostic. I believe in the spiritual being. I do think that there is a creator. There was a creator. There is one right now.
So
it's
all one.
It's
a
all
God.
Was is our future.
Yes, I would say that I definitely believe in a higher power for sure.
Is that God?
We could call it God. We can call it dogma. Yes, absolutely.
And are you are you a Christian, Amy?
No, I was not raised with religion. I'm not Christian.
She's also Jewish.
I was not raised with my Judaism, but I have it in my blood. 33%.
So you a Jew?
33% of me is.
I love the Jews.
Thank you. I'm not practicing. Never really have been.
I'm more Jewish than her. She's I know more
Jewish than I am.
The religion that she does. I'm always like, okay.
I think that April and I, we're spiritual. When I was younger, I was, an atheist because I was just didn't understand a lot of things. So I was like, well, I guess when you die, there's nothing. That's it. And it was very much my religious perspective or spiritual perspective was based on what happens when you die, which I now realize there's a lot more to it. I was more agnostic. And now I just identify as a spiritual person, similar to April. Like there is something far beyond this. And I have no idea exactly what it is, I don't know exactly what it is. And I'm very open to all of the possibilities. But I know, at least for me, like people, you know, have you heard the thing? Sorry, this is really cheesy. Love is my religion. And that is just goodness and kindness and the way that we treat other people.
I value religion. I think it is so beautiful for humans and we need it.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone to Israel? Either one of you? Well, you say you have gone to Israel.
I lived there.
I've been there, yeah.
You've been I've gone to Israel, and I've often said if I were God, and someone wanted to go to heaven, they would have to have gone to Israel first, or they cannot get into heaven.
I love Israel. It's such a beautiful place. Yeah. And it's loved living there and still love it. It's got a very special place in my heart.
I went actually because,
I was there.
She was there. when you have Jewish lineage, heritage, you can do birthright and go
Taglit.
And you can go to Israel on a 10-day all expenses paid trip, which is not glamorous, right? You're like living in dorms and stuff. I knew I could do that, but I wasn't fully committed to it until she moved there, and she was my best friend, and she moved there. And I was like, well, now I'm going to do it. So I got to go there and like have that experience of traveling all over Israel and then spend time with her and her lovely ex-husband.
Look Jewish, you look white.
I know, right?
Yeah. It's Ashkenazi.
Yeah. So when I go to places like Germany or Northern Europe, they talk to me in their local language because I look like I'm Swedish, Norwegian, or German. And I'm none of those things.
Amazing. So let me ask, so were women created to lead or to follow by God?
You're asking me now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Same thing as April. I'm sorry. It's going to be really boring. I think that, like April said, people can be birthed or grow in this world and become leaders. And it seemed like they have a divine purpose to be a leader. And that can be folks of all genders. I really don't think it is men or women. Yes, I understand femininity and masculinity being something that maybe suggests a power role versus or a leader role versus a supporter role. And I think even with those within those, they can switch up and work together. Some of the couples I know that are married in long-term relationships, a man and a woman, and it works really well and it's really beautiful. You know, there's certain times where he's the leader and she's the supporter. I wouldn't go follower, but like, you know, the supporter of that. And there's times where it flips and she is the leader and he's the supporter. And it's very applicable to those certain experiences.
Would either one of you marry a man that will follow you?
And that's all they do? No.
Oh, I did marry a man that followed me.
So she did.
That's why you're not with him now.
Pretty much.
Right?
Well, she learned the hard way.
Learned the hard way. And he is a phenomenal human. And yes, I needed someone a little bit more in his power.
I noticed that women who are educated do not make for good wives and mothers. Would you ever suggest that a man marry a woman who is educated?
Yes.
They don't make for good wives and mothers.
Tell that to all the amazing wives and mothers I know that are
educated.
Heavily educated. Yes. They're phenomenal wives and mothers.
They don't make for good wives, though, and mothers.
Nah, let's interview their husbands. Let's bring the husbands on the show.
Well, I interview husbands who are married to women that are educated, and they are miserable. Because the
you don't
woman
know the people that we know, then.
The woman thinks she is the man. And these are people in high positions in life. They hold major roles in life. But their wives are a mess.
I think it depends, Jesse, on the education as well. Like some folks could be educated in the midwifery or something. And some people could be educated on, they could have education in what if they're chefs? Right? They have culinary experience. So it depends. If you're talking about university students that have a bachelor's or they have a master's or a PhD or some sort of medical doctorate, then that could be time away from the home because they have to study and then they're in their careers or they're a professor. But my sister is a phenomenal mother and she has a son that's incredible and her husband work a lot and he excels in school and she's got a PhD in psychology and she's an amazing mother.
Really? She work?
She works. Yes.
Oh God.
She does. So he's 12. My nephew's 12. Oh no, he's 13 now. He just turned 13 like amazing. 2 weeks ago. So what is she going to do? Sit at home and wait for him to get done with school? No way. He plays baseball then? No, she would get so bored.
It's such an honor to be a mother and raise a decent child and your husband's off taking care of you and your child. And it just makes the family works in a perfect way.
Yeah, except for like in April's example, when it's not necessary for her to just be home to raise the child, because the child is at that point also
he wants to
old
hang out with
enough.
His friends. Yeah. Like, Mom, I'm not coming home to hang out. I'm going to go play baseball and
I'm a
basketball.
Young man. I'm not going to hang out with you. Yeah. Why would she wait around for that until he comes home, right? He's going to like, I'm going to all these things. I'll be back at 5. She's going
to
be there.
When auntie comes to town,
but
you
she
to got to
be
Vito.
There to cook and clean and you know,
she has, she has a housekeeper.
No, she's a wife and a mother.
No, she is. She has.
She has a housekeeper as well, though, that comes and helps with those things.
Oh, she has a housekeeper?
Yeah, yeah. Like that comes like once a
so
week.
So why have a wife and you got to have a housekeeper? You don't need a wife.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually.
I have a housekeeper and I
have someone that comes to my house, too.
I gave up scrubbing toilets.
But you guys are not married,
like, no.
So that's different.
Yeah, we're partnered though, but yeah, we don't really want to put our hands in the toilet. Do you want to put your hands in the toilet?
No.
No, yeah, exactly. So we get you.
Let me ask, are you guys feminists?
It depends on how other people define it. I mean, I would be, but my definition of being a feminist is, I think, yeah, of course, like equality for the, you know, for genders, but also my feminism is very much just about like equality for all people. Like it's just, again, keep coming back to this, like the goodness and the kindness and the respect for all people, regardless of who they are, and gender doesn't matter. I don't care if you're a woman, you're a man.
Are you a good person?
Yeah. Are you a good person? And can you treat me that way? And can I treat you that way? Can we all treat everyone else like that?
Should men be allowed to play in women's sports?
That's a tricky one.
I don't.
That's too much of an advantage.
I think that that's a bad. That's a bad setup. I think that's. It's going to be. It's going to shift things in a way. But that's my opinion.
I mean, upper body strength is a real thing.
Yes.
Like, I mean, my upper body compared to another upper body. But you know, if there's a way to make it so like upper bodies match, but that's a little complicated. So yeah, it seems a little unfair.
Should men be allowed to play in women's sports, right? Should women be allowed to play in men's sports?
I'm same. My stance is the same as the other scenario.
Doesn't feel that different. It's maybe fairness isn't the word, but it seems like it's setting things up to be lopsided and like unfair in a way.
Absolutely. And do you guys support abortion?
Yes, we do.
I'm sorry?
Yes, we do.
Both of you?
Yes.
So you think it's okay for a woman to kill the man's child in the womb?
I think that there are plenty of scenarios where it is necessary. It's a safety issue. It's a mental health issue. It's a safety issue for the child that might be born. And so to have that right when it's necessary is really important.
Amazing. So I got to put you on the hot seat.
Wait, I thought we already were, Jesse.
It's not hot seat?
We were in a frying pan the whole time. What are you talking about?
Let's warm it up. All right, here we go.
I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Oh, we hate this game. Here we go.
Okay.
The hot seat.
Which is harder, dealing with cramps or dealing with a weak man?
Weak man.
Probably cramps. I can deal with weak men.
Is the earth flat or round?
It's round.
It's a square. Just kidding. It's round.
Triangular.
It's a triangle.
True or false? Abortion is worse than slavery.
I would say false. Slavery was much worse.
Yeah, false.
Does a chicken have lips?
No, it has a beak.
I have chickens. They don't have lips.
I have one. There's one on this property. It definitely has a beak.
Unless I didn't notice its lips, but I don't think
What's
so.
The answer? Are you going to tell us the right answer to that?
Does it have lips, Jesse?
Oh, God. Is America the best country on this side of heaven?
I think...
Depends how you define it.
It can be. It's great. I think it could do better. But most countries are that way.
Yeah, I don't know of one best country.
No.
So is America the best country on this side of heaven?
No, America's a great country, but no one's perfect.
Did human beings evolve from monkeys?
I think they evolved from like protozoa, and then it evolved like bacteria, and then it sort of like it was Homo sapien, Homo erectus, and
yeah, like
it,
monkeys and went this way.
Slowly, yes,
yeah.
And then it slowly tapered off from the bonobos, the chimpanzees.
Amazing. Do either one of you keep a bottle of hot sauce in your purses?
No,
I'm afraid that it would go open.
Should I though? Should I? And what brand are you talking?
Did you vote for the Great White Hope?
Who's that? Donald Trump?
There's only one.
Oh, apparently not.
I did not.
Donald Trump, the Great White Hope.
Oh, no. Okay. I never heard that name. No, did not.
I vote Green Party ever since I was 18. Hate me, I know. Everyone does.
I voted for my dog for president. His name is Perry.
No, you didn't.
So neither one of you voted for the Great White Hope?
No.
No, sir.
Do we need more white babies?
I don't really think so. I don't know. That seems like that's a trap.
Why white?
Why white? I don't understand. I don't really. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you might not be aware of this, but every July we celebrate White History Month. And we're like on our 7th or 8th year now of celebrating White History Month because white people are under attack. And I heard that they were going to become the minority in America after a while. And if white people don't lead America, America will become a hellhole. Mm. So we need more white babies because I hear that white women are not having white babies anymore. They're having abortions.
Let's check in when it actually, like, that's actually happening. Then ask us that question.
And so will you guys celebrate White History Month with me next year?
No.
You won't? Why?
No, sorry. No.
Why not?
No.
I don't know.
I'm not feeling really driven to it doesn't excite me.
Neither one of you going to celebrate White History Month next year with me?
It's July?
See, I'm sorry. I'm going to politely decline that invitation.
No, July is April's birthday month. We're going to celebrate that instead.
And you know why we celebrate July as White History Month, right?
Because of the 4th of July?
Yeah, July just feels white.
It does feel white.
Yeah.
It's very bright out too. Lots of sunshine.
Yeah. Amazing. So rethink that and let me know so you can celebrate with me next year.
I'll put it in our shared calendar.
All right. Did you have fun?
Yes.
We did. This was really, it was thought provoking and insightful. And I actually really enjoyed this conversation. I love talking to you, Jesse.
Yeah, this is fun.
Right on. I have one other quick question that I had wanted to ask earlier and I forgot. Why don't you guys drop your anger?
Why don't we drop our anger?
Right.
Oh,
like me personally or Amy?
Both
or
of you. Why don't you just, so that you could be free of emotions, why don't you drop the anger?
Let's see. Why don't we drop the anger?
Why didn't we drop the anger or why did we drop
why
the anger?
Why don't you? Why won't you?
Why don't you
just drop the anger so you can never be angry again about anything?
I would.
That's great.
I think that,
I like that.
It's healthy to have anger because if without anger, we can't, or sadness, we can't experience joy and happiness. So there's room for anger. And I think if you have ways to express it that aren't like mean, then that could be good. But we didn't drop anger with you because I'm not angry at you.
Nope. No, not that you're angry at me. I'm just asking in general, why don't you drop anger so you can be free of all that fake emotion? You know how you feel good, you're all happy, and then you feel bad, you're all angry and sad, then you feel good, you're up and down emotionally. But if you had no anger, you would just have perfect peace and you would never be fake, you know, all that mess anymore. Why not let the anger go?
So I think, let's speak for myself, I won't speak for April, is feeling anger is a natural emotion, but the problem is when we attach to it. And like, at least I'll speak again for me. When I feel angry and I attach to it, and usually I'm attaching to the feeling and the story, I'm mad at this person for this, rah! And if I get stuck on that, then it just continues on and it affects everything around me.
Yes.
And it puts a big cloud of not so greatness in my life. And so I think that it's a practice. And I do this, right? When I feel anger towards whatever it is, like something in my life, I allow myself to feel the anger, which is what paves the way for me to allow myself to let it go. So I don't think for myself, I can just choose to never feel anger again. And if you can, that's awesome. And I would like to learn from you, but I actually wouldn't.
I promise you, you can live a life free of anger. And when you overcome the spirit of anger, you would never have to worry about loneliness, depression, suicidal thoughts, emptiness, a void. No one can ever make you feel anything. Whatever they said or thought about, it wouldn't matter, because you will have perfect love. You would be at perfect peace. So drop the anger and give it a try.
All right. Yeah, I will work on this more. And what I would just add to that is feeling the anger and allowing that as just one of the many emotions that we feel, and having the skills to sit with it, work with it, and then let it go and drop it and then move on, makes life more rich, because
amazing.
I have the ability to feel so much more, including the hard things. And I sit with them for a minute and then let them go and move on.
Amazing. I have really enjoyed talking to you guys. Thank you for taking on the hot seat, and thank you for coming on. Tell the people how to get your books, your podcast, whatever you want to promote.
Okay. So thank you, Jesse, for having us. We're Shameless Sex, and you can find us anywhere podcasts are listened to. Our book is anywhere books are sold. ShamelessSex.com is our website, and we drop a new podcast episode every Tuesday. And we really are grateful for all the work that we do. And we hope that you enjoyed this episode too.
Yeah. Thanks for having us, Jesse. Here's our book behind us. Look, it's so pretty.
Right on.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been lovely and so good to meet you.
All of our social handles are the same, @ShamelessSex Podcast too.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, it was fun. Thank you for coming on. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to like, follow, ring the bell, subscribe, and donate. Help us to keep this going. I absolutely appreciate it. And if you have other guests that you would like to see on TheFallEstate.tv, contact my producer at producer@TheFallEstate.tv. And again, Merry Christmas, unless Christmas is gone. Thank you all for tuning in. And thank you guys again for coming on. Right now. Amazing.